3. We're going to change course a little bit this hour, but this is just as much a life and death issue as the election. It's helping you become informed and aware about the danger you're facing from the Fukushima Daiichi catastrophe, the greatest catastrophe in known human history. It's not going away. It's getting worse and worse and worse all the time. That radiation goes into the water, and it comes across the ocean from west to east, and as it stacks up on its eastward journey on the west coast, it becomes more and more dense, more and more dangerous, and kills more and more of the sea life. Well, there's not much left, let's be honest. The rest of it, of course, in the air from the incinerators and from the releases at Fukushima are carried across here in the elevated winds, down low, mid-range, and up high. Doesn't matter. The jet stream brings it over here. It gets over here. Now, let me tell you, we had a little rain here in the Northwest about a week ago. It's 7, 8 days ago, something like that. And what happened, and I always do this, I have a Geiger counter, and I go outside, and I check the ground, check the dirt, check the grass, and it's usually around 36 to 48, something in there. Pretty common reading. In the air, 40, 42. This time, after that rain, the dirt in the ground read as high as 134. What does that tell you? That the rain that came over here had absorbed enough radiation to dump all over the property here and the Northwest, Washington, Oregon, Idaho, and it moved right across the country. It didn't slow down. So what's in the dirt here now is, unless it's radioactive iodine, it's not going to go away for a hell of a long time, like maybe thousands of years, depending on what it is. One of the people that has been working on this, of course, is Yoshi, and he's not here yet. We're trying to get him. I think he's in Hong Kong, but he's not answering there, so we'll see. Maybe he's out having a good time. But Dana Durnford is here as well. Dana, the heroic environmentalist crusader from British Columbia, whose videos and commentaries you can see at Rents. Look on the right-hand side under the Fukushima first radiation box, above the formal radioactivity box, and you'll see Dana's special location for his videos. He's going to be making a lot more and putting them up. They're short, and they're to the point, and we hope you'll share them. We are living, really, in the most dangerous times, politically and environmentally, we have ever faced. Nothing has been like this before, ever. It's that bad. Dana, hello, and welcome back.
Thank you, Jeff. Yes, and that's a great statement you made. It's true. We've never seen anything like this.
No.
And you were getting on with a Unisever on your Geiger counter is a huge number. That's an evacuation zone.
134, and the ground and the dirt from the rain.
55 is an evacuation zone.
Oh, man,
Pre-Fukushima, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Now, five becquerels 20 years ago.
100 counts per minute in California is a hazmat situation. That means you've got to tape everything off wherever the event happened, bring in the people in the hazmat suits. They got to go in with Geiger counters and find out what's causing the radiation to spike on people's meters, and then they got to figure out a way to take care of it. That's a hazmat. That's 100. Now, I'm at 134, and I'm just outside walking around.
Right. You're supposed to report those numbers, but nobody will take them.
Nobody cares. Are you kidding? You'll get put on some kind of a list as a nut.
But you're supposed to under the manuals of the Geiger counter.
That's right. That's true.
You're supposed to dig up all the topsoil and put up
a fence. Yeah, so what do you okay, what do? You got a garden outside. People do. A lot of people live. Every spring they do a garden, and it gets rained on all winter. Do they go out with their Geiger counters and check that garden before? No. The only thing that we know that can remove radioactivity from topsoil is, well, among other things, there are a few. Sunflowers, the sunflower plant. For some reason, if you plant them densely, they will uptake and pull out many of the radioactive nuclides. Not all of them, but many of them. And you throw the plants away. So you can cleanse your soil to a degree, but seriously, in the winter, your soil should be covered with plastic. It should not allow, you shouldn't allow the rainwater to get into your soil if you've got if you got a garden.
Yeah, you want to get your soil 6, 7, 8 feet down, because a lot of the radionuclides will get taken up in the root system. Pine trees are good. Mushrooms are good for taking it out. Tea, grown tea on your property is good for taking it out. And pine needles is really important.
What will pine needles do? What do you mean?
Well, it sucks the radiation all the way up to the pine needles themselves, so you can aggregate the pine needles, so to speak, right? And dispose of the pine needles.
Wait, how do you use... Okay, let's say you've got a garden, 12 by 12, whatever. And what do you do with pine needles? Just cover the garden with them, or do you work it in the soil?
No, you need pine trees.
Okay.
Yeah, they aggregate it to the pine needles themselves, and then you can take the pine needles
out. I see.
Yeah, because they fall certain trees, right?
Yeah, they're deciduous, basically. Right. They drop their pine needles. So, I'm going to go out and measure the pine needles. I didn't do that.
Yeah, that's a good one. Mushrooms are huge aggregators of radiation. Just amazing.
Uh-huh.
Hemp. It's amazing what you get in trouble, unfortunately, because the idiots out there.
Well, not in Oregon. We can grow it here now.
Yeah, that's hemp, really good.
Hemp is a plant from God, I'm telling you. That plant does so many things. It's
anything petroleum can do, hemp can do it better. That's what studies have shown anyway.
Wow. So you plant your hemp plant in your garden. You plant them every foot apart or whatever. Grow them densely. Take them out, and those roots go down, and they should, if they pull it out, you'll be able to measure it in the plants. And then your soil should be relatively fit for use. Interesting.
Yeah, it'll make it a lot better. And, like, I recommend to people, like, traditionally we would go down on the East Coast where you get 4 feet of frost. You have gardens all winter long, but you would dig them, like, 10 feet down, and then you would put, like, an A-frame over the top of that, and your greenhouse was 10 feet down. And so if you go down 4 or 5 feet, you won't find a lot of radiation once you get down to those dips. And so there is a good spot to get your soil for your garden each year.
How do you get good soil down that deep? Good topsoil is only 6 to 12 inches. It used to be 2 or 3 feet.
Right. You have to make it. You start. That's your foundation, though.
I gotcha.
You have to.
Well, you know, in any supplements you buy, here's another problem. You buy supplements to augment your soil to make it rich and loamy, and where do they get the contents and the ingredients in those big bags, those bales that you put in your soil? You've got to look and see if you're putting
Wow. And then, that's the foundation. You can get worms and stuff like this and get your own, start creating your own soil, which is a lot of work. There's no doubt about it, but it's better than eating anything out of a supermarket for starters. There's nothing in a supermarket or that you can grow that's going to be compared to a supermarket. Even you grow, no matter how bad it was, it's still better than that supermarket because they irradiate food. They put pesticides on it. And it has all these GMO and everything else mixed up. When it comes to eating, folks, the organic food, there's 300,000 times more energy per plate than what you're getting out of a typical supermarket. I went to the supermarket 2 days ago here, and I asked them specifically to show me everything that was organic in that whole section. We got three big ones. There's one I don't usually go to, and I decided to make sure I'm not missing something. And they had two little tiny sections mixed in with all the GMO, and you have no way of knowing.
Huh.
You have no way of knowing to cross over each other, too, the genetic and the organic, where they store them.
Yeah.
That's terrible. Say, how can you... GMO will stop you from uptaking the nutrients in your food. That's the formaldehyde and the
GMO, glyphosate is in Roundup. You spray that on your property, and you are permanently destroying your property. That's you go out and mow the grass with glyphosate on it. In the heat of the summer, it makes little mists and tiny molecular pieces go off into the air. You're going to be inhaling that. It's not a joke. The dog will bring it in with his feet. All that. I don't understand how a so-called intelligent species can so thoroughly, on so many fronts, have used science to destroy its own home. It just boggles my mind.
That's what they've done, though.
That's exactly what they've done.
And it's so easy to keep a handful of people silent than it is to tell everybody the truth.
Right.
That they went that way and they have no remorse. It was easy to find people to do it. That is the most horrifying part of this, I think, is that there's people out there would stop this from coming out. And a lot of these people are, well, as nuclear scientists, nose is not like a banana or a potato chip. And so, I mean, it's utter unbelievable betrayal of academics. The biggest betrayal we've ever seen of academics has been nuclear by far. GMO, you know, it's got a strong argument, so does, of course. But these things is not like nuclear, where you get it in your body, just driving past a power plant, it'll get you in 20 years big time.
Sure.
There is no, well, it could be more insidious than something like that. Outside of the academic, the journalism, and everybody else telling us that it's harmless and innocuous and benign, when we know for a fact that's ludicrous, because every animal in every study, in millions of studies in every country, have died with radiation. So,
you know, and the other thing, people often will think about, where can I move to? Where can I go? There's nowhere to run. There really is nowhere to run. You want to move to the Southern Hemisphere? Okay, that's a place to run. Up here? No, there's nowhere to run. And it will spread down there in time. And with how many reactors do we have on the 400 and some around the world, or is it 500? Can't remember.
Actual power plants is around 440, but there's all kinds of experimental reactors.
Right, universities and private corporations.
Some of these are low megawatts or low wattage, but a lot of them are not. A lot of them are very scary stuff. A lot of them are playing around with mixed oxides, fuels, reclaimed uranium, plutonium. These are very dangerous things in our communities that are actually hemorrhaging into our community.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you hear, unfortunately, nothing much from Fukushima anymore. We're not getting any data from over there. We used to have Japanese citizens who would go out with Geiger counters into towns and cities, and they would measure the ground, measure gutters, measure rainwater downspouts, and they would find amazing counts. We know now that Fukushima has so contaminated Tokyo, downtown Tokyo, that it really should be evacuated.
Oh, yeah.
And they've got this black mold, this black fungus that grows all over the place.
A million becquerels a square meter.
Yeah. Is it a million?
Oh. A million becquerels a square meter the black mold is coming out at. That's including Minnesota, I can't even pronounce it, all these other little, everything north of Tokyo.
Uh-huh.
Everything north of Tokyo.
Yeah.
Is, including Tokyo, all the way up.
And it's not diminishing. You got to remember that this is not something that's going to go away in a year or two or five or ten. It is not, and it's continuing to be emitted from Fukushima Daiichi around the clock. They can't stop it. They don't even have technology on the drawing boards to allow them to think, well, maybe we could go in there and try and pull that lost uranium fuel that's spewed all over the ground, in the ground, under the ground. There were the test wells that were drilled around the reactor buildings. One of them went down, I think it was close to 100 feet, and I think at 80 feet they were still picking up groundwater down there that was already heavily radioactive. 80 feet, let's call it 80 feet.
When the buildings blew up, the fuel rods in the buildings, and there's just incredible amounts of them, hundreds of thousands of them, went all over the site. And they broke apart, and they're full of pellets.
Everything to pieces, smithereens, radioactive smithereens.
They're full of pellets, and when they're not in water, the zirconium cladding fire burns off.
Right.
And then if enough of these pellets land in the same spot, they'll create a chain reaction on their own. But when they're inside the zirconium cladding and inside of big volumes of water. Now, if you look at when they lost the water in the pool, what was happening? How people said, well, it was really high numbers because the water was gone out of the pool, they were boiling dry. But a lot of people can't really wrap their mind around what that really meant. What it basically meant was you couldn't get within 100 feet of the building, 100 meters of the building, because of X-rays and neutron
bursts. That's right. That's right.
Yeah, it melts your organs right away. It's not like an isotope where, folks, it's like an X-ray. It's like a high-powered radiant attack upon your body. And so you couldn't get at the other buildings, no matter which building. If that had been just one building, you wouldn't have been able to get near the other reactors. And that the homeless and the destitute, anybody that went in there got a fatal dose every time. They might have lived for a couple of weeks or even a month later, but they all died.
That's right.
Because you cannot survive just walking within 100 feet of it. But that would also mean, think of a campfire where I can walk up really close to a campfire and get kind of burnt really bad, but I can move back, say, 4 or 5 feet, and still get, over a 5 minute period, get a really nasty burn out of it too, even though I had moved further back.
Very good analogy. Very good.
Further
very
back.
Good. Yeah.
Right. And so, But when we think about isotopes, for instance, the best way to compare that would be, like, when people sneeze, you know, in subways and stuff like that, that's why a lot of people won't touch a handrail, because of the flu germs and everything. But after several hours, the germs die off. But when the radiation landed on the handrail, it didn't die off like a germ. It stayed there forever and ever and ever,
yeah,
and assimilated itself into that material. Something that might seem like so common for everybody, we should replace every handrail in North America. We should not wear our boots in our house. We should throw all of our clothing away, or just use it for outdoors only, and get new clothing just for indoors only.
Wow.
We should always wear hats. We should always wear a hat, always, because
yeah,
it's always
yeah,
falling out. And tuck our hair up and stuff like this. And these are mitigations. We should all have different types of water filters. And people say, well, Dana, you can't get more than a few percentages out of your water. Yeah, but that's something. That's better than nothing.
Absolutely. It's accumulative, right? And better to lower the rate of accumulation, okay, even by 5%.
It is. Yeah. Even if you got to buy multiple devices. And
yeah,
it's the same thing.
I have a HEPA filter.
It's that's a good
once
story.
A year.
Good.
Once a year. It's a Winix, W-I-N-I-X. It's a 9500, and it's the pet unit, so-called, but that means it gets pet dander especially well. 9500 W-I-N-I-X. You can get it in Amazon. Once a year, you replace the filters. About $100. It's not cheap. Maybe it's a little less. But what's your health worth? What's your life worth? This thing pulls 99.9999% of everything out of the air, and it works extremely well. So you get two or three of those for your home, and at least when you go inside, you can rest assured that you're breathing clean air, as clean as you're going to get.
Well, if you can get rid of the other stuff, but you couldn't get rid of the radiation, you're still better off.
Absolutely.
Because you allow your body to...
You're giving your immune system a chance. Sure.
So everything like that, and then, you know, stuff like turmeric and spices and stuff like this, these combinations is the things you can do for yourself.
Well, let me remind everyone, Dana, if I can, again, yeah, about our wonderful sponsor, Chernobyl-created, Chernobyl-proven bio-superfood, the four most potent algaes in the world put together by Dr. Michael Kiriak. And they saved hundreds of thousands of lives with this product after Chernobyl. It's a little green pill. I take about 8 or 9 a day. Bio Superfood. You can see it at the second banner at the top of Rents. Click on that. Bio Superfood. Please read it and please get it. Take this. It's the only thing you can take that will actually help mitigate and remove radioactivity from your system and build your immune system up, so you will be better able to deal with what's left. And there's nothing else in the world. This is it. This is the product, BioSuperfood.
And that, like, that's the kind of stuff that helps out your glands, your pituitary, your adrenaline, your thyroid gland, your pineal gland. And detoxing them is so important, because we live in a world now where we have 65,000 unregulated chemicals, for instance.
65,000. Now, that's another reason to build your immune system and get a HEPA filter for your house.
Yeah,
clean the air. 65,000 chemicals.
Unregulated.
Nobody even knows how they interact with the body in most cases.
No, exactly, yeah. And that's nothing compared to what you've been doing. And there's 3,000 chemicals that are classified as food. So I can make a food out of chemicals, but there's no food in there.
Wow. Wow.
And they do, right? You know, like Twinkies and stuff. You know, anything with GMO is not food anymore. Anyway,
you know, when I was a kid, the desserts like that, the treats, whatever you want to call them, Twinkies, there was something called Boston cream pie. And they actually had, you know, 6 or 8 ingredients. They were sugary, but the ingredients were honest. Now, if you look at them, I remember picking up a box of powdered sugar donuts several years ago just for fun. I looked at the ingredients. I counted over 60 ingredients for a simple powdered sugar donut. 60. Couldn't even pronounce half of them. So that's what people are eating. They're dying. They're killing themselves with food. What
Kentucky
they call
Fried
food.
Chicken was offering super large drinks for an extra $1 if you buy Kentucky Fried Chicken, which is like chicken and chips. Anybody's not familiar, but I guess everybody is. But that glass of sugar, that big extra dollar for a big drink, that was 93 spoonfuls of sugar.
Well, the average can of soft drink is about a dozen, 12 teaspoons of sugar. This had 93?
Yeah, and I forgot the punchline on it, that if you pay the extra dollar, then they donated a dollar to the Diabetics Association.
Oh, there's the irony of it. There's the black, cruel, amusing irony. We don't need amusement like that. Yeah, you keep banging away on the sugar like that, you'll end up with diabetes.
Who wakes up one morning and says, I got a 93 spoonfuls of sugar in a drink?
One drink.
Who is it, that? Who woke up one morning and said 7,000 chemicals in a cigarette? I mean, what was
the
option?
Wait a minute. This is important for all of you smokers out there. You may not know this. It's not the tobacco.
No.
It's the paper. The paper is basically unregulated, and there are thousands upon thousands of chemicals, many of them addictive, and they're binary chemicals. They work together with each other in the paper.
And this is advertisement you see in the Canadian television lately. It's only a 30-second clip. I've seen it several times over the last couple of years. And it's just a .org putting the advertisement there. There were 7,000 chemicals. When you go look at it, it's like, what? Why would you put 7,000 chemicals in your average cigarette?
Unbelievable.
What could you possibly be? How could a government...
It's called addiction.
There's no way to break it. And then they vilify everybody because they smoke, but they don't...
No, it's the most addictive substance. And they used to say nicotine was, but they've forgotten to mention the other thousands of chemicals that go right along with it.
Yeah.
This is all diabolical. Just incredibly bad.
What I ended up... Because I was addicted since I was 13.
And really?
I had a charge account when I was 13 for beer, a charge account for cigarettes, a charge account for gas for my speedboat. I had my own speedboat. There was no cars where I grew up. But I was a man at that age. I was on the ocean full time. 3 o'clock every morning, got up and headed out at 3:30 on the North Atlantic. An average of a 30-foot groundswell. And a misery. It's a misery machine anyway.
30 feet? Groundswell. Groundswells.
Up and down.
How did you not get seasick?
You did. I did every day, all day. And it's recorded in the logbooks that were handed in every year. And they used to judge the weather and how fast I got seasick going out to harbor. If I got sick halfway out to harbor, I knew it was going to be a rough day.
How could you function, Dana?
Well, you would puke over your hands. Excuse the thoughts, folks. But I would puke over my hands. My hands were all, every line on both of my hands when I was 13 was cracked wide open. All the lines on your fingers
were
cracked wide open and bleeding. Every day you would soak your hands each morning in water before you can eat your breakfast, and you head out on the ocean. And then you were pulling ground line and gill nets and hooking line all day. But you didn't know any better. You thought that was normal. And you
thought that's
what life was all about, right? You had finally become somebody when you were able to go out and do that job. And I was treated like a man from the age of 13 on. I had that responsibility, and I took it seriously. At 13, I had a girlfriend, and I used to take the big boat. This is how much my dad trusted me.
Yeah.
He would give me the big boat on a Sunday to take my girlfriend with a couple of lobsters and go down to a beach. And you can imagine how innocent I was at that age, of course.
How big was the big
girl at that age? But you had a girlfriend, right?
Sure, so of course. How big was the big boat?
Yeah, that was a 33-foot boat, and I remember one time the Russian fleet had come in. They were going to buy squid on the coastline. They brought in a big boat, a big factory freezer, and they parked it in a great big furor not too far down the coast from us. And I had to bring Dad out and drop him off in the open ocean, 30-foot swells. And drop him off. He had to climb up onto this big boat and guide it in. And everybody was with their cameras freaking out because there was this little tiny scrawny kid down there, and he was this expert bringing in a boat and big seas, and never slammed into it, of course, not like that, and drove away. But that was I was trained to be like that. I didn't know anything but that.
Wow.
And I had, that was my responsibility.
That's amazing.
No one would let you take the fishing boat out in my community. I was the only kid there that was allowed to do it.
Well,
but
I
had earned it.
You certainly did. Hold on, Dana. We have to pause. We'll come right back with Dana Durnford in just a minute. Okay, welcome back. Your attention again over to the right side column. We have three columns down there in news. Look for featured stories right at the top. You'll see the Fukushima box, and you'll see Dana Durnford's special location where he is going to produce many more videos. He just started to post them, and they are all crucially important. They'll be short to the point, and we'll be able to spread them around much more quickly that way. So thank you for that, Dana. We don't have, as I've said, and this really bothered me. For the first year or two, we used to get information from Japan. We used to get YouTubes from Japan showing people with their Geiger counters out on elementary school lawns, on street corners, measuring rain gutter downspouts and all that. No more. None. I don't see anything from Japan. There may be some, but I'm not getting it. Nothing.
I scour the internet all day. I don't find it.
Well, the lids come down on those people. They can't do it. Remember about our no bugs and no birds thing. We're asking for your help. It's fall. This is when you'll see a lot of insects, supposedly. But we're not seeing insects in many locations across the country. You'll find that under the Fukushima Nuclear Catastrophe box, the first one. And we're asking you to contribute if you'd like. You can read some of the emails that we've gotten from people. If you have some observations you'd like to share, please do. Well, they're very important. So we'll put them up there as well.
And people that have sent me that information, please send it to Jeff. Please forward that information to Jeff. And I had so many people. It's unbelievable how much Slasher came in on that.
Really? I didn't. If you got, yeah, if you have any, just pop them over to James or me.
Yeah, I got to get into that again, dig it all out, and put it.
Do you still have them?
Make a video. I do.
And, oh, good.
You know, I gather everything. I'm like, it's just really something. What I'm actually, I can gather 500 to 600, 700 pieces in a day when I'm working hard. The last 3 or 4 days, I've been working on the lecture coming up in the community and the second lecture. Trying to rent the next spot again today, and
are you gonna try and work all over BC then?
Right. So it kicks out from here and then move immediately into the British Columbia throughout that immediately, because they need to be warned. And that I have a quarter page ad which you got up on your site in the newspaper starting tomorrow, and that the next spot I'm going to rent is 700, can handle 700 people. I was in today and talked to them and just waiting for the quote to come in tomorrow morning or something. I got three different facilities there, but I'm going to go for the big facility for the second one. The first one is 75 people.
Okay,
Friday.
That's in Powell River, British Columbia, in case any of you in that area are listening right now. Powell River, to go see Dana in a presentation, and that's coming up on October 14th, which is this Friday.
Yeah, and so that one... I would say for everybody, if they're planning on coming here, to wait for the second one, because it could handle I'll be able to go smaller if we don't get a full crew. But because it's you got all kinds of fishermen here, you got all kinds. And
where will the second one be?
The second one will be at the local stadium
in Powell River as well.
In Powell River, and then after that, I'll be at other cities. And so that's to put together a foundation to help me do all of that and find the volunteers at the same time.
Oh, this is really good. This is a very smart move.
Yeah, local volunteer is really high here. And these local people know each other really well. And it's going to be hard for strangers to assimilate themselves in the good graces of them. They'll still accept them, don't get me wrong, but they will be watched with suspicion that they could be infiltrating. That kind of scenario is possible here. Say so. There's some protection for me in that way, and you can get a job done too. And people will do it because you got just so, like just out here in Theodosia, there's so many, which is a big furor right alongside of me, about 30 kilometers away, is a huge amount of mussel farms and oyster farms, now fishermen farms. So these places, as you know it from the headlines, mussels are full of cancer and leukemias, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, but that's the only thing under shoreline. And a friend of mine who has farms here for 25 years is retired. We were talking about it last night, and he was saying, well, Dana, look, it's not like they don't see the difference there. It's not like they don't wonder what is going on. It's not like they're not naive, and that, because this is the local area for me, everybody kind of knows who I am. And so that's what I'm hoping to accomplish. We started up the company today, the Nuclear Proctologist Production Company for films, and got that legal, and then...
Good job. Yeah, tell me about your lecture. slides, illustrations, talk,
yeah,
Q&A.
And so 45 minutes of lecture and then 45 minutes of question and answering. But what I'm going to do, it's a two-hour, I got to rent it for 2 hours in case a lot of people shows up. I'll just do a one-hour show and then do another one-hour show immediately after.
Oh, very good.
Yeah, and I will have security guards in uniform at the same time to protect myself and make sure that everybody gets a chance to ask their questions and et cetera, et cetera. But also, they'll be telling anybody, if a lot of people show up, they'll say check back in an hour, and you might run another show depending on how many comes through, right?
Uh-huh.
You know, I originally wanted to get a bigger place, but...
Hey, this is a very auspicious debut for you because you've done it. You've got it together. This is the mechanism. Dana Durnford on the road, town to town. You'll become, you could run for governor someday.
Right. Yeah. I am going to run for prime minister in the future. That was my intention last year, was to run the next
time.
Good
for you.
Yeah, I'm just not going to take it anymore. And but also because I'm such a public person anyway, and I have been all my life, and I don't have any reason to hide away from that. I don't mind it. I'm not shy about it or something like that. And I'm driven, obviously. And I don't know why. In one sense, who knows what how much fate?
At least you recognize it, honor it, and give it free rein.
That's
right. A big deal.
But I am suited for it, and then it would be wrong for me not to do it. That's how I feel anyway. And that I can trust everything that I'm saying and doing, and I can know that at least I've done that much. That is worth it on its own. But at the same time, you know, I look at those big storms. We've seen Matthews, what it done.
Yeah.
Now, it was gusting 180 to 200 miles per hour when it went to the Dominican Republic and Haiti and Jamaican places.
Yeah.
And it certainly was doing that at parts of the mainland when it hit it. But, you know, it died down pretty good at that stage. But we look at Meranti was 230 miles per hour. We look at Typhoon Chaba, which is turned into a tropical storm now. But that hit South Korea last week at the same time at 233 miles per hour.
Hmm.
That was like, that threw a tsunami from the waves itself. I don't know if you've seen the video, shocking video of Typhoon Chaba, C-H-A-B-A. These were incredible winds we're seeing repeatedly. That frightens me. That is one of the bigger motivators I've ever had. That hits you guys down there or us here or anywhere, anybody anywhere, like it just did. Yeah, it strips down everything. We've seen the pavement stripped from the roads where this stuff came through, where
unreal.
The water didn't get at it. It wasn't water. It was wind. Yeah.
Are we expecting, Dana, extraordinary, unusual storms down here in the southern parts of the U.S., off in the Hurricane Alley? Are we going to see any hurricanes off the West Coast, which occasionally happen? They build up off Mexico and move up once in a while.
We can expect to see it anywhere now.
Yeah, that's my question.
They're not following the models.
It's kind of wide open.
And it looks like they're ready to go anywhere at this stage. And I'm not sure what the circumstances will be to cause that to happen outside of it's never stopped coming out of there. And then if people look at all the models of Fukushima, the dispersal models, you'll see that the models where they show the dispersal, the big plume spreading out, it also shows that it never stops coming out of the source. It's constant. But even though the models are usually based up on a month or 2 months or something like that, but they do show that it doesn't stop coming out of there. So they knew back then they weren't expecting it to stop coming out, because the models were produced fairly quick after the accident.
We don't see new models, by the way.
No, the Norwegian Institute for Air Research stopped making them in May of that year, and they had put out quite a few models, France and Austria and a whole bunch of different, Canada and NOAA had put out models too, but they hid them away for quite a while. They were leaked online, and then they were verified. So there is resistance going on inside the system itself, and you know, I can't imagine everybody is evil, and that, you know, you don't need to control everybody to control the narrative. As you know, if you can control parts of the media, you can control most of the narrative, because people just paraphrase whatever they hear anyway.
Sure.
But ultimately, we got no time left. We better get busy on any plans we're trying to make, and we better resolve any issues we got with our friends and our families and our loved ones. We better start putting our differences aside, and because soon we'll have to work together as one. That is a fact. Soon we're going to have to all put aside any bigotry and prejudice and racism, because we're all in the same boat anyway. There's no way to get away from it. At some point, we're all going to have to come together. And I know most people on the planet can't even dream of that one. And nobody thought it was possible. I think in times of great crisis that a humanity will rise and show its finest and its best and its, and will show a diverge amount of just, there's so many smart people on the planet. There's so many gifted and talented and incredibly endearing people on this planet that if we were able to reach them, they could come up with incredible solutions, incredible mitigations.
Well, they're never given a chance. They're
right.
Pushed aside. They're pushed to the back of the room. They're stepped on. They're discouraged. They're put into debt. They're kept constantly under stress. You know,
yeah,
you know the game.
Oh, great points. Really good points. Fukushima is something that is not going away. And no matter what, the death of the Pacific is not, the ocean is not coming back. The acceleration now, we see literally all the species are decimated, the insects, the birds, the mammals, the animals on the coastline.
Let me tell you something. I went, a couple of weeks ago, and there was a bird feeder in a department store here, and big bags of bird seed next to it. So I said, yeah, that'd be nice. I think I'll get a bird feeder. Well, I brought it back and brought the bird seed back, and I watched, and I had been watching. But I watched again. There are no birds around here. There are no birds. There are a few scrub jays, and that's it. No songbirds, no starlings, nothing.
That
one group of starlings came through migrating, and that was it. There are none. We used to have all kinds of colorful birds. There were songbirds all day, every day. No more. Gone. A few ducks,
scavengers.
Hardly any ducks. Canadian geese are doing well. They're not dying out yet. They're hanging
too,
in.
I see that
too,
yeah. They seem to be hanging in. Not like they're supposed to be, not in the masses that I'm used to.
No.
But they're still showing up, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're such big birds anyway. The ones we got up here in the lake, it's a 35-mile lake, they're the only birds in the lake. And there was around 30 of them. And
that's
somebody
it, huh?
Had around seven
uh-huh.
chicks. And they look really good. I got good pictures of them. I was really happy to see that. I'm so happy to hear about anything like it. It's the darnest thing. Or anybody tells me that they've seen something, and that makes me happy. It like puts a little hop in me. That's not something I'm normally like at all.
Sure.
But that's something that gives me, well, I understand the dark side of it. And so hope is a very fleeting thing for me. But I do understand that dark side of it. What's going on, obviously, like you do and anybody that's listening, is that we have an extinction event, and we can't eat anything from the Pacific Ocean. You just can't do it, people. And so the better way to think about it is fish live about the longest out of everything in the ocean. Most of the life that is vulnerable is in the tidal zones. We showed that was an extinction.
Mm-hmm.
And that the 4 million other species didn't try to recede, even try to recede the coastline. We didn't see any new species.
Didn't there was
up.
No recovery. None.
Yeah, even though it was open real estate, the whole coastline.
Yeah.
That should have been dominated by at least one of the species. Should have took over everything. And so when the starfish were gone, you would expect the mussels to take over because they eat mussels. But they didn't take over. They disappeared.
Well, the bivalves, you're getting to the cancer, I guess, pretty soon.
Yeah, they aggregated to 100, 115,000 times of radiation, say, shellfish,
uh-huh.
Whereas a fish will aggregate at 10, 15, 20,000 magnifications. And so small mussel and clams and oysters and escargot and stuff like this is very dangerous. And it's equivalent, so is mushrooms, and so is tea bags from certain areas.
Well, they're water filters, right? That's what they do. They filter the water.
Yeah, good point. And, but we could, like I said, once again, isn't it better if we had hope? See? If we had a little bit of hope, if we had some kinds of act of good faith from the system itself, some recognition that there is an issue. In order to do that, you have to get rid of nuclear immediately and get rid of GMO.
So, Dana, it's so hard when we're lied to, and I mean we collectively, all of us, when humanity is lied to, kept in the dark, and essentially sacrificed. Yes, we need to give hope to people. It ought to be the job of the mainstream media, but we know now that the mainstream media is, in fact, the enemy. It is the dark side. It's not working for us. So
hey,
we don't know.
If let's look at it this way. Say we had a major awakening tomorrow. And within a week, we get all this crazy news coming out of all these institutions working on solutions and just dropping everything and going to work on all these solutions, get rid of the nonsense.
Save the planet,
that,
you bet.
Yeah, would that not give us hope?
Yes,
would
it would.
Would that not make life bearable?
Yes,
would
it would. To see a lot of startup companies approaching new ways,
just
new ideas.
To go to war against this. And
yes.
Innovations and everybody on YouTube coming out, even though they're wrong, but coming out trying to come up with solutions.
That's what should be
anything.
Going on. Yeah.
Right. That would give us hope. Same as if all the government was come out at the same time and say, and give us everybody organic seeds and ban glyphosate or pesticides and stuff like that. Encourage everybody to plant organic foods everywhere to help the insect and the animal kingdom and everybody else. Just imagine if your community was planting organic instead of making pretty flowers and lawns, then how much money would people save because they weren't burning the money driving to the grocery shop, let alone buying stuff when they were getting there?
Yeah,
you'd be able to walk out and food was everywhere. Would that not give us hope? Would that not give us some kind of fate? And would that not cement us together for a future? Future, what is going to be the future in a perfect world? Would we find our way past the misery machine and get rid of the bad stuff at a society and just work on doing the moral and ethical thing and coming up with mitigation for the things we have done. But at some point, that's where we will end up. And so why not head there now, see, is the question. When why, you know, endless war and endless censorship and endless track tracing and databasing, every technology ever created in the last 20 years has been immediately flipped to try to corral us and use us against us and to track trace and database us. Why do something like that? Why waste all those precious resources and everything else and precious metals doing that? Because we're controlled the way we were controlled, and that the money machine has completely out of control with no checks and balances. But at some point, that is the direction we would head into, where, you know, in a real world, we don't have it. I get it, but that would be fate, is all I'm saying. Anything like that could save the world. Fate. That we are doing the right thing and trying is enough. That's all we needed, and we can't get that out of the system. Even and all they do is lie and attack
right.
anybody like
right.
yourself and whoever, you know.
Yeah, all
Yoshi
right.
Yoshi never made it.
Let's. No, he just emailed me. He said the phone rang twice, but there was no connection when I answered. So it sounds like there was somebody interfering again.
I think so. Yeah.
Very easy. He's in Hong Kong now, I guess.
I heard phone calls, you both lost it right away. As soon as you tried to answer it.
Yeah.
You never got a whole word and it was gone. It was someone trying to answer for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll get Yoshi back on next week. And in the meantime, let's remind everybody in British Columbia to watch for Dana Durnford coming to your town. He'll put up a schedule when he gets one together. He's got an illustrated lecture that will change your life, might save your life, and it's going to anger a lot of the people who don't want you to know. But what you need to know is what he's going to tell you. The first lecture this Friday, October 14th, in Powell River, B.C. All right? Is there a general, they should just go to the nuclearproctologist.org for more information.
Yeah, I haven't even posted that one up there. But that is the plan, is to build up a ground roots right away and then get them to help me organize all the communities and fund it and everything else and get me into those communities and create the same thing there. So it has to be done. Someone got to do it. And
well, there's no one else
to do it.
And they're very lucky to have someone. You're it. I mean, you are the environmentalist who's done the work.
And
they're
I
not going to get it from you,
skills.
Vic.
Yeah,
no
I got
way.
The skills to do it.
Yeah.
And I know that once you watch those presentations, and then you got 45 minutes to ask me questions.
That's often the best part.
Right, there's nothing off the table with me. I have everything loaded up into my equipment, and so whatever they want to come after and talk about and look at, I can bring it up in a heartbeat.
Oh, wow.
That's unique, see? Yeah.
Well, maybe you can bring your lecture tour down along the West Coast, too, which is where it's needed. Maybe
I am planning that. Yeah, I am heading for
the major cities. We can use this program to get people in all the major cities along the West Coast to help you find a venue. There are churches. There are all kinds of empty meeting halls that people can use. And
well,
you can come
I'm
there.
I'm not sure if that conviction will stop me from crossing the border. I got to find out about that, if that's going to cause me grief. And so I only got, the date today is 11, so I got 9 days, 10 days for an appeal before the appeal time runs out. So I got to make up a decision on that.
And so the conviction and 3 years probation.
So the conviction, 3 years probation, that trial, I want to appeal that, because I shouldn't have lost that. I won that hands down.
He didn't lose anything. It was a kangaroo court.
Yeah, no, I beat him hands down. So on the record, if you look at the record, anybody independent looking at it would see that I beat them on every morsel, every minutia, I stomped them right into the ground with their narratives and came with a proper narrative.
Wow.
And I wasn't making stuff up or something. I was hitting them with hard balls.
Oh, I'm sure it was no contest.
Hard
you just
balls.
You smashed them, steamrolled them.
Did any of them
show any awareness of what you were doing, that, oh my God, this guy has the truth, like they didn't know, and all of a sudden they heard
itself,
it?
The courthouse itself, all the sheriffs and all the other people in the courthouse, yeah, they did.
Uh-huh.
All the lawyers knew what I was up to, and we had the boat parked out front, even though it got robbed. It was parked out front for three days, right in front of their main door. They had to go past it, and with nuclear proctologists written on it.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, the chatter was going through that building for 3 days straight. Everybody was smiling at me.
How and, nice.
Yeah, no, it was extraordinary. That was the one thing I wasn't expecting, but the one thing, because, you know, when you're in that position, you feel extraordinarily vulnerable, but I didn't. You know, I didn't.
Well, because you had the truth with you. That's your ultimate defender. The lecture tour, I think, is a masterstroke, and I think it's going to become very successful.
I think so.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
No, it's a big subject here in British Columbia, and that, you know, I put it off too long, and I should have done it before, but I obviously wasn't ready, or I would have.
No, you've got it. Now's the time. You're there.
Yeah, now I'm motivated.
This is good. This is very good. All right. The first lecture, Dana Durnford, this Friday, October 14th, Cranberry Hall in Powell River. Where is that? What's the next biggest town?
We're isolated. You got to take a ferry to get here.
You're going out there.
It's a known place, 25,000 people.
All right,
it's 17 miles away from the main.
You should have a pretty damn good turnout. The local newspapers should cover this well in advance.
Well, they've already sanctioned me because they're putting the ad in there. Right? And so once you win them over, you win the rest of the community over.
Very
That's the
good.
Fact.
All right. Okay, my friend. Take care. Talk to you next Monday. You be well.
You too, my friend. Hugs. Thank you for everything you've done, my friend. You made a huge difference.
I'm here. Here to help.
Yeah.
All right, Dana. Dana Durnford. And there we go. Wow. Tuesday night, now in the books. We'll be back tomorrow night, Wednesday. Let me see who's on the schedule for tomorrow night. Oh. A strange beetle is on my keyboard. Oh, it's a pine beetle. All right, you go outside shortly. Jay Widener tomorrow night, David John Oates, and speech reversals from the debate. I don't want you to miss that, because apparently David has found some things that are more than shocking. All right, that's tomorrow night. We'll talk to you then. Take care.